Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
Picture a man standing about 100 yards away from the gates of the kingdom of heaven. And he's standing there, and he's looking around, trying to figure out what exactly is happening. And in his hand, he's holding a satchel, a leather satchel. Finally, he decides that there's no point in putting this off. He better just walk up to the gates and see what they say when he gets there, as many of you might be hesitant as well. So he walks up and he rings the bell at the gate. I love when I can put special effects in. And the gate opens and out walks a rather dignified looking angel, probably Saint Peter, but I don't know much about things like that. And he says, "Yes, sir, may I help you?" And the fellow thinks, this isn't good already. Well, I'm here. And the angel looks at him and inquires, what does he have to show that he should be in? What has he acquired in his life that gives evidence of his relationship with the kingdom of heaven, that he should be allowed past these gates? And when he was asked the question, the man looked at the angel and kind of stood up a little bit, kind of puffed his chest out and held his chin. He said, "Well, that's pretty simple." And he handed him this leather satchel in which the man had carefully, at least in his mind, it was filled with rare jewels and precious coins and other objet d'art. That's French for art objects. But when you're shishi, you say objet d'art. And all manner of things like that. And he handed the man the bag, thinking to himself that the angel's going to look in and quite impressive. Well, the angel takes the leather bag and he opens it up. He looks in, he reaches in, and then he looks at the man. He says, "Sir, I'm sorry, but this bag is full of nothing but empty excuses." Don't let your life become a bag of empty excuses. Because that is what it is to this point. Most of us don't know that our life is nothing but a bag of empty excuses. Because one of the many excuses we have for being the way that we are is that the way that we are isn't the way we're going to end up. That we know better and that we're going to do better and the time's going to come when we make changes. And that at that point, certainly we won't have to make excuses for ourselves anymore because we'll have a different point of view. We'll look at life differently. So I want to explain to you here, and I have a story to tell, but I want to set it up properly. I want to explain to you what that means, that one's life is a bag of empty excuses, but the person who holds the bag doesn't know that. The fact is that you don't know what to do with your life. That's the fact. That's the fact. You don't know what to do with your life. But the fact of that is based in something that can be changed. And what can be changed is that you can learn what your life is for. See, you don't know what to do with your life because you don't know what your life is for. And you don't. And the proof that you don't know what your life is for is that day in and day out, the mind is filling itself and telling anyone that will listen the various excuses that one has for why one is, and then you fill in the blanks. Angry, depressed, lazy, frightened, worried, nervous. 10,000 different conditions produced by a series of relationships that take place inside of us moment to moment to moment, wherein a person actually doesn't know what his or her mind is occupied with, actually doesn't know what their body is driving them to do, actually is not conscious of what the emotional content of the moment is and how it's seeking what it's seeking. These continual, what's the word that I want? When you acquiesce, yes, these continual moments by which a person, without knowing it, acquiesces, gives in to whatever the desire is of the moment, whatever the thought is of the moment, whatever it is that seems to promise something in the moment, that continual relationship that a person has with these various parts of himself leads a person day in and day out to do all kinds of things. But when everything is said and done, the person has nothing. See, we have, every one of us, every day, most likely, a telling moment that we don't hear because we literally don't want to hear what the moment is telling us. And the telling moment comes when you're sitting there and all of a sudden this urge comes to go do this, or a compulsion to get that done, or suddenly you feel like, God, what am I doing here? I need to do something more than this. 1,000 times a person finds themselves struggling in that moment to figure out, what do I do now? He just said that. Should I say this back or shouldn't I say that back? What do? I got this news and I'm not sure how to handle it. And all of a sudden, in every one of those moments, even though the person doesn't see that life is telling them something, the fact that they come apart and have to look to some thought, some feeling to come in and take them where they hope they will be safe is the proof that that human being does not have a life. They have an excuse for a life. An excuse for a life. And how many times, and you have to see, this is, I want to kind of break into my own talk. See, you have to ask yourself these questions. I simply sit up here and work as a kind of talking mirror. That's how I see myself. I'm presenting to you the facts of your life. And if you look in the mirror, if you see in the fact that, you know, I spent the day watching television, or I spent the day trying to figure out what I should eat, or I spent the day going over an argument I had with somebody yesterday, or I spent the day trying to figure out how to fix somebody's life that's troubling mine because they're not quite in line with what I want. I mean, you look at what your day is filled with, and what you will see is it is filled with nothing, period. Now, what does that mean, it's filled with nothing? It means something relative to us, because there are billions of human beings on this planet for whom a day of nothing is just what they want. They don't want anything more than those horrible moments that come as they do when all of that taking part in one activity after another, guided by whatever thought or feeling or physical desire it is that comes up and seizes and says, this is what's pressing at the moment. Those people that reach those moments where all of that activity proves to be empty fill themselves with yet another excuse why it's like that. I'm not cut out to have anything different than this. I've had too rough of a road. I think I'm just going to quit here. Thousands and thousands and thousands of excuses for why a person in this life continues to meet the evidence that they don't know what to do with their life. Now, I have so many points at this juncture in the talk that I want you to understand. There's nothing that was created that doesn't know, in quotes, what its life is for. Nothing. The difference is that all of creation that we look out and see in our experience, it doesn't have a choice in doing what it's created for. There is a beautiful, eternal process, a chain of command, if you want, a chain, and I'm going to use the word, a chain of communication. Beautiful chain of communication. Think about it. We may not think in terms like this because we, in our present state, our minds don't see light as a form of communication. But light itself is a form of communication. Cosmic waves, energies, all these things are forms of communication. And the world that we live in, the natural planet, itself is in a very distinct order, not only by forms, but the consciousness of those forms, and all of those forms and all of that order take part in a beautiful, in the Word, to use a Christian term, they take part in the Word, in this living expression that starts out perfectly pure, and then in various gradations comes down, and then suddenly you have a planet. And a planet that has all of these life forms on it. And you don't think to yourself that the tree is receiving the communication from the sun, that itself received communication from the larger system. We don't think like that, but there it is, and it's factual.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire Magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
And all of this beautiful energy streaming down and communication taking place from on high to lower to lower to lower to lower. And what's the purpose of that communication? What is the purpose of this beautiful stream of intelligent energy that nourishes, sustains, destroys, and creates over and over again the world we see? What's the purpose of it? The purpose of the communication is transformation. Communication, transformation, communication, transformation, because everything that receives the communication passes it on. Did you ever think of that? Remember that game, Pass It On? Do you remember that? Somebody whispers, pass it on, and you'd pass it on. That's what life is doing. But we've fallen out of line. We've fallen out of line. We're not in God's game anymore. We've become creators of our own and don't know that we've become creators of our own, because each time the game that we play in life, all of the things that we're occupied with shows us the sheer emptiness of what we have been and done up to that point. All we do is call on another excuse that gives us a new start in a game again. And I want you to understand these principles more than I can possibly express. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I get so passionate when I'm talking, is because I'm hoping somehow, and I know it works the opposite in some people, I'm hoping somehow that the degree of the energy that I'm able to give as I'm talking will somehow touch inside of you that part of you that remembers in some small way. Of course, I can see and scale this is true of the world, and that everything in it is exactly where it needs to be to receive the communication, to pass along to that which it must, so that that which it must can continue this process by which this evolution, in this instance of the world, the physical world that we see. But we're outside of it now. This is what's happened to humanity. We're no longer sharing in the relationship that we're intended to, that we've been given the role to do. And having lost our role in life, here's the thing, having lost our place, having lost our role in life, the critical thing is that we have lost the relationship that gave birth to it. Can you understand that idea? How many of you can understand that idea? Having lost our role, we are no longer in relationship with that which has established the role in the first place. So now there's this terrible, and it is, it's terrible. You see, you don't know this. You suffer from that sense of being separate and don't know that you suffer from it, because the mind steps in to provide some distraction for you, some way to excuse the way you're feeling, and then give you something that gets you past the moment of feeling apart from life. And I'm telling you that you must learn what it takes on your part to consciously understand what it is to be apart from that role. Because that is the only way in which it is reestablished. It cannot be established by an individual creating a role for himself, which is what the planet is filled with. 6.5 billion actors, each and every one carrying around a leather satchel that every time life produces something that's punishing instead of pleasurable, each time they reach that moment where they don't know what to do with themselves, they simply reach in the bag and find another excuse or create something outside of themselves and stick it in the bag. But you see, the problem is that that comes to an end. That comes to an end. That's the problem with that. Not only are there momentary discoveries where this whole thing has come to an end and a person finds themselves on the other end of a drink or a drug or the next plan or whatever they're doing. How about this? Or the next anger. You know, anger is a wonderful way in which a person excuses himself for the emptiness in his life, because she fills herself with that anger, that resentment, and that gets them past the moment of seeing how empty things are for them. See, we're afraid of that, aren't we? Hey, can you see you don't like the word empty? But you mean basically, I don't want to particularly hear a talk about that I don't know what I'm doing with my life, and that the evidence is that I'm pulled from pillar to post by any thought or feeling that comes up. As long as it gives me something to do, it's my friend. We don't want to hear this, but the fact is, if we want to be different, we have to hear this. So I'm going to tell you a certain key lesson now. And take a deep breath, because it's a deep key. This is a deep key. Like, you're going to need oxygen. Take two. If you're listening to this on the radio or wherever you are at home, take a couple deep breaths right now. Listen, please, to this idea. Freedom from fear must come before the fear that searches for freedom. Freedom from fear must come before the fear that searches for freedom. Now, What on earth does that mean? Freedom from fear must come before the fear that searches for freedom. Well, let's start with the back part of that lesson. Before the fear that searches for freedom. How many of you understand that freedom is just a certain kind of ideal, a word that human beings have, that is what they call on after they're in prison? I'm walking along. Everything's great, man. You know, she loves me. It's going this. I'm going to get that. Things are looking up or whatever it is. And suddenly, clang, life drops. Actually, life doesn't drop it at all. Suddenly, the appearance of the fact that, what have I been doing? She's leaving me. He said something. I'm never going to get over what he said. Oh, no. Oh, I'm not going to be able to live like I was living before. Or I'm not going to. Oh, no. Don't you bring that to me. Whatever it is. And suddenly what? Fear. Fear. And what happens to a human being in the moment of fear? Here's what happens. The instant the fear becomes evident, born out of the moment of that fear popping up, which was already there as a potential in the creation of that person's life, what he or she had embraced. Suddenly the fear comes, now there's me. Fear, then me. And actually they appear simultaneously. And now I'm the one who has to free myself from what I fear. I got to figure out what to do with this, that, or the other. My life is suddenly predicated. The purpose of it is to do what? To figure out a way to somehow get rid of that which I fear. And there comes all the time first the discovery that, well, what have I done? I thought I was making myself a life where I wouldn't have to be afraid anymore. Where I wouldn't have to sell my soul to anybody that didn't approve of me. I mean, you fill in the blank, and there's the evidence suddenly that not only have I not accomplished anything, meaning my leather bag is full of nothing, but now I'm right back in the loop. I've got to figure out what to do now to set myself straight so that I don't have to go through this terrible, fearful event again. And the nature that guides the human being in such a moment is itself a creation of the fear. That self, that sense of one, did not exist until the fear came up. And then all here I am, now I'm going to fix things again. And what do I fix it with? More excuses. More ways in which to hide from myself, listen, that I did not make it to freedom. I did not make it to self-possession. I did not make it to being present. What does that mean? I didn't make it to freedom. I didn't make it to being present. It means, I said, that freedom from fear must come before the fear. Freedom from fear must come before the fear. And I'm asking you to see something. So take another deep breath because this is deep and it's important. Can you see that if freedom from fear doesn't come before the fear that searches for freedom, that means one's whole life will be spent just waiting for the other shoe to drop and then trying to figure out a new shoe, a pair of shoes to put on where they can be safe. Can you see that? That means that all my life, that fear is greater than my possibility of understanding its existence and my relationship to it, and therefore I have to be a servant of fear because that's what a person turns out to be. Who can see it? All right. Freedom from fear must come before. But how? See, this is the beautiful question. How is that possible? Because look, if we can see the necessity of what I'm talking about, the necessity that in this order, that there must be freedom from fear, and it must come before the freedom that we look for in the moment of fear. It must be before it. Is that possible? The answer is that life of contentment, of kindness, life of truth, life of goodness is impossible without that order being established in a human being. Until a person understands what it means that freedom from fear must come before the fear that searches for freedom, that person just sits and does nothing essentially except go through one situation after another where they produce for themselves what they think they need to get out of the problem, and nothing changes for them. So here's what we're looking at. And you must tie this together. I'm asking you to try to tie together this idea. Well, freedom before, freedom from fear must come before that. How can freedom come before that? It means that we must live in a different relationship with ourselves. We must live in a different relationship with ourselves. Why do we know that's true? Because the relationship we have with ourselves now is nothing but a nature in which we produce a bag of excuses every time that we come undone, every time we see life bring to us something that we don't know what to do with, and we find ourselves wildly running off this way or getting angry or just trying to go to sleep someplace until it goes away. How many of you know that? You know, just everything that we can do to not, and I only know how to say this one way, to not take what we have been given as a possibility for ourselves, which is to live from something that goes before us.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
You've heard that idea. I go before thee to make the crooked places straight. What does that mean? Now, unfortunately, psychopathic religiosity has turned that idea into some stick figure that you wear on your chest, and somehow that's going to protect you. That doesn't protect you from anything. If anything, exacerbates what happens to you in such moments. We're not talking about that. If freedom from fear has to come before the fear, that means that in the moment which suddenly the conditions turn, and there I am, and that condition starts to come up by which the fear appears, or the anger, or the worry, or the resentment, that means that in that instant, I must be with, something must be attending me. Something must be in attendance with me, whose very presence in that moment does not participate in that same moment the way I do when fear suddenly becomes my guide and I try to figure out how to get free from it. I'm working very hard to get across a deep idea to you, because this is not the way we see things, and we can't see things this way because our perspective is thought generated. Thought only knows how to react to a moment and then call on its own body of experience to explain what to do. That means that all the time it is one step behind life, which is why it is the master excuse maker. Of course it has to make excuses. It's not in life. It's the It's the residue of it. It's the junk left after a moment that then tells itself what happened. And there can't be freedom in that. Even when one has a great excuse. How many of you have a great excuse for being unpleasant? You won't meet somebody who doesn't have a great excuse for being unpleasant. Yeah, and you know what? This is just a little sidebar. Do you know that some people actually think they're great because they're unpleasant? That's a fact. So, I better get to the story. Let me refresh your memory about several ideas here. The first one, that we live in a universe in where we can see quite clearly there is order to things, that there is communication, that communication makes transformation, that transformation communicates from itself to the next level, and that part of that great life, God's life, that we are in, everything has a role. But because of the fact that we are outside of that line, outside of that lineage, if you will, all we have, instead of the fulfillment, how about this for a word? Instead of the gentle peace of mind that comes with knowing that one is participating in the moment as one has been given to do, instead of that, we are always giving ourselves things to do, none of which mean anything because they're outside of life itself. So I'm going to tell you a story now to explain some of this. Take a deep breath. You like stories, don't you? A man found himself washed up on a shore. Just kind of woke up there on the shore, and his clothes were a little bit tattered, and he wasn't even sure what had happened. One can only assume certain things, but even that wasn't his power to do. He just found himself washed up on a shore. And he kind of looked around and tried to figure out what was going on, but he couldn't. So he picked himself up and he kind of wandered into a village that was there. And when he wandered into the village, you know, people, here's a man and he looks like he's shipwrecked. And you would think someone would say, "Are you shipwrecked?" But he was kind of ignored in this little town. He wanted to get something to drink. His mouth was parched and couldn't seem to find anybody that was kind. It was hard to do, but fortunately for him, as he was walking along, all of a sudden he hears a voice behind him. "Oh, there you are." He didn't even know who he is, but he turned around and he said, "Hello." And the man said, "I've been looking all over for you." He said, "You have?" He said, "Yeah." "Good." He said, I'm not sure where I am. I'm not even sure who I am." The fellow said, "Well, look, all of this will be evident to you in a little while." He said, "Come with me, and I want to take you to the castle. There's a great castle that sits in the center of this little kingdom, and I want to take you there. We've got some gifts for you." Sound like Vanna White. "We have some gifts for you. Gifts are good, since I don't have anything." And the man said, "Come on." And they hopped up in the carriage, and the two of them behind this horse-drawn carriage, they go along, and they're riding through the village. Then they get out into the country, and as they ride through the country, try to picture this. There's one big estate after another. But you can't really see anything. You can't see in the estate because all you see is this great, great walls or great fences that completely shield the property. But you know it's an estate because it's surrounded by these great fences, by these great walls. And so as they're riding along, the man is looking at this and he's, you know, taking in impressions as one is wont to do. He's thinking, "Boy, this must be a pretty prosperous kingdom. Look at this place. These people have got these beautiful stone walls and tall fences. Gosh," he said, that's the life," he's thinking to himself. And they keep going, and then at a certain point, they come to a turn in the bend, and then there's a place with no walls, no fences of any kind, and there the fellow in the carriage looks over, and he sees a man, and the man has a t-shirt on, and he's perspiring because it's evident he's tilling these fields. And he's sitting on a great set of, he's sitting on one side, he's sitting on top of one of these great field horses, and there's another field horse next, and they're pulling this plow. And over to the right, there's several acres of beautiful grains, and then there's an orchard over there, and you can see a little house on the hill, and you can see this beautiful property in which all of this fecundity, this richness of natural foods being grown. And he thinks to himself, that's pretty. And he kind of thinks to himself, he wonders why the fellow doesn't have a big fence, but then he thinks to himself, well, maybe he just hasn't made enough money yet to put a big wall there. This is the kind of reasoning that one does. So he gets to the edge of that property, and he's still thinking about it. He looks back, and he notices that the man who's tilling the field is waving at him. And he waves back. You know, he's the first guy that no one's waved at him the whole time. First one, he didn't see anybody. No one in the village waved, and all the houses had their fence, but this guy waved at him. So he waved back, thinking, nice fella. Maybe I'll get to know him later. Anyway, there they go, and they ride off, and they get into the castle. And when they get to the castle, they're met there by a few fairly distinguished-looking individuals, not up-to-date, but just nicely dressed, clean. And they say to him, sir, we are glad that you are part of the kingdom now. The fellow says, I didn't know I was. He said, yes, you're here, aren't you? And the fellow says, yeah, I guess I am. Do you have any place else to go? No, I can't think of anything. Now, try to put yourself in the story, because I'm talking about you. Do you know what you're doing here? Do you know how you got here? And the fellow says, look, here's what we have for you. And they turn a corner, and there's two beautiful, large field horses, just like the two he'd seen, a beautiful animal, strong animals. And in a cart, there's several bags of what looks like seed, and there's supplies that looks like a kind of rolled-up tent or something like that, something for him to make a temporary shelter for himself. And then, as he's looking at all this, the fellow says, well, not only do we have these things for you, and they go around the bend, he says, you need to load these into your wagon, and there's all these fantastic tools, farming tools, things the man's going to need. And the fellow looks to the giver and says, you know, this is great, but I don't own anything. He says, well, that's part of it. You see, everyone who comes here gets a piece of property. That's part of the deal. When you come here, you have some acreage. Everyone here does. You're kidding. No, you do. He said, that's fantastic. And the man said, yes, it is. It is something. It's a wonderful opportunity because, sir, you are here, and everything that you are able to produce here, everything that you grow, everything that you take care of on your property is yours to do with as you wish. Well, the fellow thinks, this is a pretty good break considering I don't know who I am and where I've come from, but this sounds promising. And so he takes the materials, and they go in the cart with a carriage following behind, and they show this man this nice piece of property out in the outskirts of the rest of everybody, a beautiful piece of property. Fellow thinks to himself, I can't wait. And so he gets up and he sets his tent up and he does all that. And the next day, he gets up early. This is it. I can't wait to get my crop, you know, my first crop into the ground, because I need food for one thing. And so he gets the seed and he gets his horses and he mounts one of the horses as he's supposed to do, and he attaches the gizmo behind it, and he puts the, you can tell I'm a farmer, can't you? And he puts the harness that harnesses the two horses together, and he goes, what shall I call you? And, all right, Joe and Mo. Okay, go Joe, go Mo, go Mojo. And thinking that they're going to start walking in a straight line and tilling the property, instead all of a sudden Mojo just take off like a bat out of heck, running up the field. Just, he's flying behind, being dragged by these wild horses. Finally they come to a stop in a pasture where they wanted to get to and eat some grass that was there. And he says to Mojo, you know, boys, we have to work together on this, because I have to. And he's talking to these horses like they know what he's talking about. And so he says, come on, let's go back. And so, you know, they give him one of the snorts. He gets back on one of the horses. Maybe he thought, maybe it wasn't, I had the wrong leader. And he got on the other horse. He says, let's go back to the barn. And as no more did he say, let's go back to the barn. On 1,000 miles an hour, Mojo go running back to the barn. They wanted to go back to the barn. By the way, have you ever been on a horse or rented a horse? You know, you can't get him to go out, but boy, you turn around to go back to the stable. You can't stop him, can you? That's just like Mojo. Heads back, crashes into the barn, man gets hurt. He thinks to himself, it's just a bad day. I'm learning my way with these horses. But for the next week, day in and day out, every time he gets on Mojo to do the work, Mojo has something else they want to do. And he can't for the life of him get them to do one thing. So he thinks to himself, well, maybe I don't know how to work with Mojo. He knocks on some of these gates where these big fences are because he can't see through. He wants to talk to somebody about what did you do? How did you get Mojo to do what you want him to do? That your property looks, you know, that you've got all this property well fenced like that. But nobody comes to the fence. Only somebody opens the gate. Hello, what do you want? I was wondering if I could ask some questions about how you get these field horses to do what they're supposed to do. Go ask someone else. Slam.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GUYFINLEY.org.
Well, finally, it occurs to him that he remembers seeing a man who had those two field horses in tow. And he makes the long walk back to that property, and he walks up to the man. And he says, "You know, I'm here. And I'm new. I've been working for a week, and I got to tell you something. I don't have one seed in the ground because I can't get these field horses to do anything. They have a mind of their own. Maybe I should bring you in the story at this point." Every part of you presently has a mind of its own. And the strange thing about one minute the thought wants this, the next minute another party says, "I don't want that." One minute you think to yourself, "I'm going to go do something," and 2 hours goes by, and not only did you not do what you said you were going to do, but you actually did something that was counterproductive to what you wanted. That these field horses in the story represent these unruly and dark parts of ourselves. Not dark as in evil, but dark as in not understood, not directed, not under control. And so he went to the fellow and he said, "I'm having just a whale of a time. I don't know what to do because when I get on the horses, they just won't do what I tell them to do." Have you ever been in a place where maybe you knew you should do something or you should not do? We'll go with that. Have you ever knew you shouldn't act something out? Knew you shouldn't say something to someone because you knew it. You knew you couldn't do it properly, that there was anger in you or fear in you, caught up. That's what it means to be on one of those horses. When something acts for you, something speaks for you, something thinks about what it wants to think about. Something convinces you that the excuse you have for how you are is the same as being different than how you are. Do you see what I'm saying? And they said to the fellow, "I'm just having a terrible time." And the man said, "Well, look," he said, "I guess no one told you." He said, "So I will." He said, "Everyone who comes here," he said, "No, you know what? Better than me explaining this to you, I'm going to show you something. Come with me." And they took a walk down the road where one of these great walls was. And the man who was introducing this newcomer to the property said, I want you to look through this. And there was a hole in the wall. And he said, I want you to look through. And the fellow, the man, the visitor, you know, the new man, the newcomer, he thinks he's going to look in there and see. He looks through the hole, and all he sees is a wasteland. No crops, no orchards, nothing. Everything had gone into the wall. Everything had gone into the fence. What does that mean? Everything about our life goes into maintaining the appearance that we're in control of our lives, as opposed to reaping the harvest of being in relationship properly with ourselves, in ourselves, to do what we are here to do, which is to take care of what we've been given as human beings. The fellow was stunned. Couldn't believe it. He said, are they all like this? And the gentleman said that he was with every last one. Why do you think they build these fences? Why do you think they have these walls? And psychologically, I'm talking about how we are able to momentarily maintain an appearance in society, in public life, and then can't wait to get away from everything that shows the wild horses are about to break for whatever they're about to break for, and people will see that we're nothing like we pretend to be. How many of you know these wild horses? It's great as long as everything's going fine. People are flattering us or it's a good day, meaning the stars have lined up and somehow our energies feel right. But God help us on the day when those thoughts and those feelings start dragging us left and right. And all we can do is wind up behind them going, what's happening? Why is life like this? And making excuses. So the man who had this beautiful pasture who was able to maintain these horses said, you need to understand some things and I'm going to explain it to you now. He said, first of all, everyone who comes here is given a pair of wild horses. They are not tamed horses. They are wild horses. What does that mean? There is an untamed wildness that lives in the center of every human being in certain forms that the human being has no awareness of whatsoever, but that for a long time in this life derives a certain sense of pleasure from the urgency, the strength, the power of these creatures. But at a point in life, a person recognizes that the power of these creatures is not mine. I don't have power over these creatures. These creatures have power over me. Do you understand what I'm saying? These thoughts, they have power over me. This relationship has power over me because my emotions tell me I'll be nothing without it. You fill in the blank, and what you'll see is that all and everywhere that we look in our lives, our days, they just go by. They're just gone. Why? Because the horses run here and they run there and nothing is made of ourselves. We are here to, in fact, and I'm using the word make something of ourselves, but not in the sense of a worldly relationship. In the sense that we're here to let life make of us something that by that relationship gives us what we're looking for relative to these wild horses. So back to the man. He says, look, you can't try to ride these things right away. The man says, well, if I don't ride them, what am I going to do? Now, this is his point here. Do you understand? I don't want to walk. Man said, what you must do is you must take the reins and you walk before these horses. You walk them and you show them what it is that you intend to do with what you have been given. Because if you don't walk with them that way, they will do what they want to do, because when you mount them, in their present condition, there is no authority over them. They understand that all they have to do is run away and run away and run away, and eventually that you'll give up, because that's given to their innate nature. They understand that. So the task, sir, if you want to plow the field, if you want to grow what it is that you're here in this life to grow, which means if you want to become a part of this relationship that gives you, and that's a key word, that gives you what you need in order to be attentive and properly guide these wild parts of us, then you must day in and day out start from the right place, and then you must do that one thing. You must walk, reins in hand, with these wild horses behind you. Now, what does that mean? Because a person says, well, you mean I'm supposed to be present to the nature of these thoughts and feelings, and not only am I supposed to be present to them, but that's the only thing I'm supposed to do? That's it? Is spend my days seeing that these states, that these thoughts and these feelings, seeing that they're guided properly? Yes! Because without that, all you have is an empty field that has not fulfilled its purpose, nor have you. All you have is the fences and the gates that you show, the excuses for a life that has not borne the fruit that we're on this planet to bear. And this is not a religious, not a motivational talk. Clearly, clearly everything is here to bear fruit. But the bearing of the fruit comes through relationship. And the relationship begins with receiving the communication. And the communication transforms that which it enters into. Which means when we're aware and our sole purpose is to be present to ourselves, to remember ourselves, and not get carried away to every pillar and post that thoughts and feelings pull us to, by George, what happens? Ah, I'm here. I'm alive. I am. I actually live. Not I think. Not I worry. Not I'm afraid. Not I'm trying to control. But I am part. The process is complete. And the process is complete because I have given myself completely to serving that process in the role I'm given. Foolish, arrogant, egotistic human beings don't want any role other than the one they have given themselves, and they didn't even give themselves that role. It was provided by a set of runaway horses, thoughts and feelings, produced by a society and a culture whose sole purpose is to create walls by which the illusion of being at peace with oneself and having completed life's purpose is made perfect. But it's not perfect. And no one knows better than you and I that it's not perfect. So the work begins with recognizing that, of course, look, who wants to go out? Now I'll say it to you different. Who wants to go out, inwardly speaking, and spend their time attending to their own horses? For one thing, they're so unruly. And the man said to him, by the way, here's a beautiful truth that you don't know. It's also under law. If the horses that you're trying to lead by the reins run away from you, don't chase them. Just stand where you are. They must come back to you. But you have to stand there. You have to do the process interiorly of learning to wait and attending to yourself. Don't attend to your thoughts about what yourself is. Don't attend to the emotions that want to drag you left and right and define you. Attend to the point in time in which there you are, present to yourself. And all you want to do is take these horses, these energies, these states, and be the proper person in relationship with them. And if you do that, if you stay with them, you will for yourself begin to see the field of yourself tilled, seeded, and a new harvest comes. And the harvest that comes is the richness of the soul that has fulfilled its true purpose on this planet. And there is nothing that can substitute for that.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.